Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, what is up? It is me, Ewan Patterson, and welcome to the What Culture Gaming podcast, because I am joined today by Josh Brown and
Hello.
Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
Hello there. It's great. We talked about Star Wars earlier on, but now we're going to be talking about an interesting article that I read this week from the fine folks at Vice, all about Sony's, basically the most recent PlayStation update and what that's done to the PS3 and the PlayStation Vita. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself right now, why is What Culture Gaming talking about the PlayStation 3? Why is What Culture Gaming talking about the Vita? What? They're not relevant anymore. I'll tell you right now, it is relevant, because this article by Dia Lashina was incredibly interesting. They were talking about all sorts of stuff. I highly encourage you go check out the article if you can. We should have the link in the description or somewhere as well. I'll tweet it out afterwards as well. But basically, the new update that came out for the PlayStation, I believe it was this week, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was this week or last week, basically makes it impossible to buy PS3 and Vita games through the online PSN store that is separate to those consoles, with a little bit of context for this being that in the Vita's case, the PS store on that was already like at death's door. It wasn't working properly and stuff. So the only way now you can do that is to go through that. And the PSP games as well have also actually been removed. So separate to the PS Vita, PSP games have also been removed from the web store. So the only way to now buy a PSP game is to buy it through a PS3 or a PlayStation Vita, which obviously raises all sorts of interesting questions, you know, regarding planned obsolescence in particular, because we all know that this update has come out probably at a very deliberate time. You know, the PlayStation 5 is literally less than a month away. Sony obviously keen to promote their new product and obviously get people to invest in the shiny new machine, has all the shiny new games that obviously, you know, release for a full recommended retail price of about $70. So there's all sorts of ethical quandaries that are coming along with this and all sorts of other interesting, you know, kind of questions it raises. But I wanted to ask you guys first, is this dumb from Sony? Why they're doing this?
I think it is. If you are someone who loves like playing older games, if you are a fan of games being as accessible as possible, it is kind of a dumb move, certainly from a consumer perspective, to gate off these games to specific consoles. Because yeah, even though a lot of people might just play PS3 games through their PS3 and use that store, it doesn't make sense to me to remove that functionality after the fact. Like if it was always the case that the online store never allowed you to buy PlayStation 3 games or Vita games or whatever, like that would still be a bit iffy. But it's the fact that they're taking that feature away in kind of like this pursuit of prioritizing the new and the now and what's kind of flash in unifying all of their different versions of the store into one that is sleek and efficient and runs well, at least for PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4. And it's just kind of like in response to what Microsoft's doing, where they're out there and they're saying, you know, this is a box that can play all of your old games. You've got a Games Pass service. Don't worry. You will be tailored to. Maybe that's because we've got no exclusives, but it doesn't matter, really. It's the fact that they're doing it. And Sony is very much going, look, We're here to tick a box. We've got backwards compatibility for the PlayStation 4. We're going to introduce some older games, but we're not committed to doing this extensively. We're not committed to our past library. And you can see that in the quotes of the executives. You can see that in the fact that Demon's Souls Remastered, which I'm genuinely looking forward to and I think looks great, but it's telling that that's one of the launch titles for the PlayStation 5, one of the big showcases, a remade version of a game that you can get or you could get very accessibly on the PlayStation 3 beforehand.
I mean, you said the box then, and now all I can think of is Batman Forever. So good job there, Josh. Ben Roy, what do you think about this? As someone who has posters of the Xbox men all over his wall, what do you think?
Phil Spencer and Don Matrick, shall I say. But now I can only, at the moment, you can think of Batman Forever. I can only think of Rude Box, that really bad Robbie Williams song. But I digress. And I'm going to play Devil's Advocate a bit here. And like, kind of like, not defense only, but trying to see it from their point of view. And like, their store, for example, is, I'm trying to think of words to say that I can sell the internet, which aren't bad. Rubbish? Just say rubbish?
That is a word that we can use.
And so, for example, if you was to search the words Resident Evil, for example, would you like to see 400 bits of DLC from Resident Evil Revelations 2? Yes, I know you would, because I see that they're doing this to clean it up a bit. What they should have done, rather than just axe it off and put it over the river and let it go of the waterfall and we all like cry as it goes away and dies, we should have they should have basically had a box which lets you tick which system. Simply, like, say if I search Resident Evil, I can either have Vita, PS3, PS4, PS5, rather than just binning all that off together. So I can see why, from like a weird point of view, they would do it. But yeah, it's so weird to just basically axe it off and go, nah, this is gone. It's kind of like, because on App Store, I've had a few games over the years, Resident Evil 4, for example, on the App Store, which I can't play anymore because that's just been deleted or it won't work on my version of the phone. I can't find it anywhere now. And there's some other things that have just gone forever, things that I've paid money for, and they're just sort of like dead. And it's kind of like Apple, and I think this might have happened in Android, where it's that these digital stores sort of moving in further on and sort of like the weird licensing thing. But this is the real first time that we've had like a major cutoff where it's like, now that we're actually severing this. And I still don't know how I feel, because like at the same time, we need to preserve games the whole time, but and they should, like, I don't think there's any excuse for it on the website, for example, like for you to go onto PlayStation.com and not be able to find a PlayStation 3 game there. That is just, that just does seem like sneaky business tactics where they're just going, now we want the new, as you've been saying, the new flashy thing. And it's weird because, and I think as we go on, as we all get older, as we go generations through, like we're only going to be cut off more, like Nintendo doing it with their eShops twice, almost, I think, for no reason. Like everyone rebuying those old games over and over again. And this, thankfully, this generation, we get given them, but they're within like the Nintendo subscription. That sort of like is like £2 every like century, it feels like. But yeah, like Nintendo have done this before where they've cut many hard cuts, and now Sony are doing it. And I'm also like worried, like why they need to do it. Basically, my ramble is coming to why they need to do it. I can sort of see where it's come from, but there's so many other ways like you could get around this.
Yes, I mean, I guess my rebuttal to the idea that there are different ways to get around it is that it shouldn't be that needlessly complex, and that when you look at, you know, you crunch the numbers this way, it's very obvious that Sony are doing this because, you know, they stand to make more money from pushing people onto their newer products. They stand to make more money, like Josh mentioned earlier, from remasters than they would over, say, being able to spend like a fiver on the original Demon's Souls, whereas you can spend, you know, obviously it was a full remake, you know, it is a full new game, but equally, it's easy to see how like the cogs begin to turn and why this all actually happens. And again, one of the things that I thought was interesting, because when I was younger and I was you know, kind of getting really excited for the next generation of consoles, I originally had an Xbox, and then I got very excited about the Xbox 360. I didn't really pay attention to the PlayStation 3 or anything to do with that because I was an Xbox kid and that's like what I wanted. So I got the Xbox 360, and I had no idea about the whole backwards compatibility scandal that plagued the PlayStation 3 when that launched, and how it was, you know, shit with the idea that you would have, you know, things be backwards compatible, and then it wasn't. And there was a really interesting point here where the article touched on a comment from Jim Ryan a few years ago, where he was talking about classic PS1 and PS2 titles. Well, he basically asked, and I'm slightly paraphrasing here, but he did describe those games as ancient. He said, why would anyone want to play something that looked so ancient? And I think there's an interesting kind of shift in messaging here, because like you said, you know, we have talked about the fact that PS5 will have backwards compatibility with the PlayStation 4, and again I would argue that's more out of convenience's sake for Sony, because obviously when you launch a new console and it doesn't have that great a library, it makes sense to be able to say, well, we're not going to segregate our player base. If you are on PlayStation 4 and you want to play with the mate who's on PlayStation 5, we have these games that are, you know, cross generation and work that way. But equally, it is a case right now where I'm just sort of like, you're looking at what they've got right now. They're not doing backwards compatibility out of like a kind of the same way that Microsoft have doing it, where they've been doing it for years now. It's more of a case of like, well, okay, this is a feature we kind of have to have, otherwise people are going to get very annoyed. Yeah. It doesn't feel like a genuine kind of attempt to say we are preserving a part of our history. This is part of PlayStation. You can do this. It definitely feels as though it's very selective. And again, as there's the, you know, technology kind of advances and the blurring of the lines between generational leaps gets more and more, you know, less clear cut. I'm kind of going somewhere with this. I've completely lost my train of thought, but the idea of like, you know, it's more of convenience's sake than out of an idea of empowering the player to then be able to go back and revisit those older beloved titles, who, you know, if we're going to take Jim Ryan's sentiments here, you could argue that Sony are potentially quite contemptuous of, because they're not going to make them as much money as the newer games.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when it comes to, you know, me and Scott have done like a bunch of news over the years in the run up to the PlayStation 5 about like the new patents that have been filed by Sony about making this kind of like legacy system by bringing back PlayStation 2 games, PlayStation 1 games, PlayStation 3 games to the system. Obviously, that's never come to fruition, but a lot of fans put a lot of stock in those and hoped that the PlayStation 5 would introduce that level of backwards compatibility. But you can't get away from the fact that comments like Jim Ryan's are constantly being made. And when the head honchos of Sony are saying, why would you even want to bother with these older games? Like, it inherently lowers their value. And if they keep pushing that message, pushing that message, this is a PG-13 rated show. Wow. If they keep pushing that message, like, people start to believe it. You know what I mean? If that's the hard line, people who haven't experienced, you know, accessing those older games like we have, you know, being a bit old or whatever, like people who are coming into this as their first console generation transition, like, will just buy that line. And that's how these things kind of like become solidified or whatever. And I do think you are right that when it comes to Sony's managing of backwards compatibility, it very much does feel like they're doing it in response to the response that Microsoft got for theirs. I think that if 5 years ago or 4 years ago or whatever, when Microsoft came out and said, we're putting backwards compatibility into the Xbox One after the fact, if that wasn't received so well, if Games Pass wasn't received so well, there's not a chance in hell that Sony would be pushing ahead with backwards compatibility for this generation, in my eyes. But then I think at the same time, the fact that they're making any progress at all should kind of be... we should be a bit optimistic about it, because it means we're being vocal enough that they have to listen. You know what I mean? Essentially, we're forcing them to listen in one form or another. And if we keep saying, you know, we want to be able to access these games, we want these games to live alongside the remakes and the remasters, hopefully it gets to the point where they just kind of like have to listen to what the people want and have to adapt to the market and stuff like that. I think it's, you know, it's really interesting, because unlike movies, where I always poo-poo the idea that remakes like replace the older games, I just don't think that's true. And I think they very much can live side by side. But I don't necessarily think that that's the case with video games, just because of how inaccessible a lot of those older titles are. You know, for instance, Resident Evil 2, the remake, is an incredible game. It's a great achievement. It's a great reimagining of that title. But for a lot of people, that really will just supplant the original, because it's really hard to get a hold of the original unless you have an original PlayStation 1 or you emulate it or something like that. Like, it's really difficult to just pop in, find it on the store. If you want to buy it, you need to own the console and you need to find the version secondhand, which, to be honest, in this day and age can be really expensive. Like, that's a completely different set of circumstances than me going online, going into Amazon, typing in Ghostbusters, and just choosing whether or not I want to stream the remake of the original. You know what I mean? Like, that is a level of accessibility that the gaming industry is almost kind of actively trying to remove itself from, because there is ultimately lots of money to be made in replacing those older games with newer versions, you know?
It's weird because I also don't think that a lot of that is totally, it is, I can see that, I see the argument that they should have the PS3 stuff backwards compatible, but they're also heading to the Cell processor that they were trying to push on with, and they basically caused themselves so much pain. Like if even things down to like changing the name on PSN, like how long did it take them to finally get around to that?
It doesn't even work. They had the little like the fine print where like, oh yeah, you can change your name, but be warned, you might blow up your PlayStation and lose your entire life's identity.
There's always seems to be like, but one more thing, or sort of like a reference to some of our British fans, like a Del Boy and Rodney sort of thing, like hammering something onto the side, like with the backwards compatibility in PS3, they just stuck a PS2 in there. That's what it was. It was just just get it in there, just get a PS2. That's what it was. It wasn't anything magic.
And the turducken of consoles.
Yes. And like with this, the Cell processor that is causing, that's why we haven't seen so many other games just come over, or that we haven't seen the backwards compatibility stuff, because it's just too hard for them to work around. It's gonna take too long. Like nothing's ever really too hard, but it's just the money, and you don't see the return in it, and these are all businesses. But it's weird because on the same thing, I don't know if I would ever see them, like, say, I don't know if I'm ever going to say that, oh, they should provide a way for us to play PS1 and PS2 games in a way, because I don't know, for me it just feels like a totally different era. It's like asking like Nintendo to make the cartridges sort of like run these days in the way there's just something in my brain that separates them two from the rest. When they're the PS1 classics on PS3, like stuff like that should be just over already, and things like that. Anything digital purchased or anything that would have run on the PS3 without that PS2 jammed into it, I think should carry on forward. And Microsoft, like, they've done a great job, but let's be honest, the first Xbox really wasn't a generation. It was like, say, 10 games and then a bunch of other stuff, and the 360 is kind of where they started, so they do have that sort of like easier perception, that sort of easier way to get through, because they've got less to worry about, and they don't have to worry about like things in like 94 95 sort of thing running now. They have to worry more about, like, say 2000 onwards. And but the same way, I also think, like, yeah, like the video game sort of preservation, where I don't know where it sort of comes from, unless you want to call it the PC, because we have Metal Gear come out recently on PC for the first time, I think officially. And now that game is going to live on officially, hopefully forever. Like, thank God, because it should, and so should Resident Evil 1 and Resident Evil 2 and that sort of thing. But I think with them cases, the originals, Capcom kind of want them to be forgotten about and die, because they're also not kind of canon as much anymore, because they've sort of been, as Josh said, they've been replaced, especially by just in canon, also by the newer generation. So it's always this like really weird quandary of like, how do you do it? And I don't know, I'm no sort of like scientist type, so I don't know how to do it either. I'm just spouting opinions as I sort of like ramble through.
I think it's so interesting though, because like it's something that I've never worried about as a player, even though there have been multiple times where I've realized I'm not going to be able to eventually play. Like, you know, I made the generational leap from Xbox to PlayStation with the PlayStation 4. I have an entire library of games at my parents' house in like the Northwest, where I won't be able to access them for ages, because on one hand, I own my classic Xbox, it still works, it still pootles along every time I visit, and I'll fire it up and I'll get the little like lava lamp loading screen, it'll work fine. But the Xbox 360, I don't know whether that thing was made of like bits of tweed and like low grade plutonium or whatever, but that thing is like, I worry that a lot of these, the hardware has gotten a little bit more volatile and is less, you know. I mean, again, I'm not a retro gamer, so I don't know what it's like to own an N64 or like an NES or whatever. I'm making a lot of people feel old in this podcast, I feel.
I have an N64 just back there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know how that hardware is maintained over a period of time, but I do think it's an interesting point that we haven't really ever talked about video game cataloging or preservation as an industry, really, even as things have become more digitized, as opposed to film, where, you know, preservation and cataloging has, you know, kind of been imbued in that medium for decades now. And, you know, I think there's similar conversations happening with music as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, to be fair, I know a lot of people who own like cassette tapes and stuff, a lot of those are beginning to kind of erode now. And obviously, you know, I think the same thing will happen eventually with a lot of the physical media that we own. And the lack of cataloging, like you said, I think it's because you raised a very important point there, Josh, about the fact that these companies are willing to replace a lot of these older titles and they're content to have something that's released 20 years on. And again, I think it speaks to a lack of long-term vision and just that sense of immediacy. They're really kind of focused on that idea of getting that instant gratification of being like, well, what can we sell next? Let's not worry about the long-term implications. Let's just keep going and going and going. And that sucks for people who collect video games. It sucks for people who want to make sure that games continue to be accessible. And again, I thought that was one of the most interesting points that was brought up in the article. They mentioned here, I'm just going to read out a direct quote. They said that these games will continue existing unaltered until the last PS3 dies beyond repair and the Blu-rays of Road Beyond Salvation, without Sony taking a vested interest and a firm commitment towards backwards compatibility, preservation, and allowing consumers access to these games. The best we can hope for is the work of emulator developers and the people who create ROMs and ISOs outside of approved channels to maintain even some semblance of what these games were. And they also bring up in the article as well, it's like, well, if these games are going to be, you know, these classic titles are going to be less and less accessible, where will they be able to be, you know, kind of where will they crop up? Will you have to go to a museum to play, I don't know, Donkey Kong, the original Donkey Kong Country? Where will you have to go to play, like, you know, the original Halo or whatever? It's just an interest. Obviously, you know, we have the remastered and the remakes and stuff, but it's just, again, it's interesting to me that the industry collectively has not really had this conversation specifically for the generations going on from the 2000s.
I think it's interesting because back when Nintendo were in the game, they ruled the world and it was cartridges and Sega was trying to get involved. Games consoles weren't seen as like almost a media unit. They were just toys and they were a toy company. And the idea was that they were a toy. You have it for a few years, get rid of it, get the new one because we want to sell the new thing because they're the mindset of a toy company. Whereas now, like we've entered this current generation and onto the next. Now, I think, I don't know about Nintendo. They're just doing whatever. Like there's no chance you're playing Donkey Kong Country in a museum because Nintendo will send Reggie along and he'll knock you out for that. But with Xbox and PlayStation, especially, I think with this current generation and the next, and more so with Xbox and the last one, now they're thinking of it more as a media sort of company. And for at least pretty much this entire generation onto the next, you can keep your purchase and move on. So I think we're taking the step in the right direction. But yeah, it's just the problem with the older stuff, which was seen just officially just like toys, that they were the toys that we were selling to the kids and trying to crank out new things as fast as we could, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like really conflicted on this whole topic, to be honest, because on the one hand, I do think in some ways we are getting better. You know what I mean? Like I said, Microsoft is obviously pushing for this whole kind of like revolution, having these games be accessible and also making them play better than ever. They're not like remastered or remade, but you get, you know, the games running in higher frame rates, you get the games running in high resolution, auto HDR and stuff like that. And then you do have Sony, you know, even if they are taking away the ability to directly buy PS3 games on the store, they also have a lot of PS3 games that you can play on PlayStation Now. So they do have like this system in place to potentially replace the old system. If it's good enough, I don't think it is, but they are doing kind of something. And although I really did love the article and found it really interesting, I think the author mentioned that one of the only reasons Sony might be doing this whole backwards compatibility thing for PlayStation 4 is because they don't have a great launch lineup, which I don't totally agree with, because in 2021 we're going to get like God of War, Horizon, you know, we got Spider, we got Demon's Souls this year. Like, that's much, much better than what we got at PS4 at launch. So I do think they are doing it because of kind of like consumer pushback or whatever. But at the same time, like, we've got Sony doing this, then also taking away the functionality from the website. We've got Nintendo just absolutely just tearing up and being the worst and getting away for it by releasing a bunch of games now for a limited time and then taking them off sale in March next year for no reason. For no
reason.
Dude, why do they keep saying it? Why do they keep saying that they're going to do it? Even if they're going to re-release them at some point in the future, the fact that they're drumming up this forced scarcity for digital games that are going to be arbitrarily taken off the store before the end of the next fiscal year, it's like that is so anti-consumer, and they can get away with it because these conversations, you know, I'm not saying we're going to change anything by this podcast, but, you know, these conversations on an executive level, on a kind of, you know, publisher, you know, CEO level, like, they just aren't happening because, like we said at the beginning, there's just not much money to be made in it. And if there's not much money to be made in it, and if people don't really care because they're not buying it, then they're ultimately going to just let it, they're going to like ride it out, continue to make money, and then just deflect any potential pushback, because ultimately, I do think they are in the business of replacing things and focusing on the now. And like Ben Roy said, they're almost viewing their back catalog as outdated, kind of like toys that they're more than happy and content to put them in the cupboard and not play with them until someone goes rummaging around in there specifically looking for it, and then they can have it. But you have to take down all the boxes, you have to rummage through, you have to find out the different parts and plug it together.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing to do with this is that obviously over the last console generation, we have seen more attention turn to classic games and older games with, you know, the rise of remasters and remakes and whatever. And I have found myself recently really wanting to kind of not retreat into my old games library, but I've certainly been coveting it from afar for like quite a while now. So I guess that's, you know, it's not a slight against any of the new games that obviously I'm not going to come around now and just be like, oh, games today suck, because that's not what I think. But equally, when you have ground several hours into the Marvel's Avengers game to see the numbers go up, and you're like, wow, I remember when I was like 7 and I had Simpsons Hit and Run and it was a great time, but I can't find it anywhere now. That's good. That's really good. So that's kind of where I am right now. I'm annoyed that maybe there is some sort of hidden knowledge, hidden sort of like knowing glance in the industry right now, where they're denying us the opportunity to go back and revisit and access these experiences more easily, because they're secretly all aware that maybe, just maybe, like, they don't value it because they can't monetize it in a long-term way. And I'm sure, you know, whatever, in 5 years' time, maybe EA will finally wake up and do a Simpsons Hit and Run remake or remaster. And I will, of course, lay down my entire soul and wallet for that game because I desperately want it. But again, equally, you know, I do think it's interesting that we are having this conversation as more and more, even though, you know, as we are looking forward to the new generation and all the new experiences that are coming from it, and it is a very exciting time to be invested in this industry and medium, I do think as a whole, and again, this might just be because the people I hang out with and people our age, you know, we're now kind of getting that nostalgic sentiment of wanting to go dive back into all the games. Again, that might just be an age thing, because I'm sure that when I was growing up playing video games, there were probably people who were like 10, 15 years older than me who grew up playing, you know, the original Sonic and Mario and stuff who were desperate to play more of those classic experiences. But again, it's just something that's kind of, I've noticed more and more recently. So I don't know how you reconcile all of that with the moves that these publishers and games companies are currently making, if that makes sense.
I think totally, man. Like, yeah, I think it comes with like perception as well, and like how the players view like these older games. Cause I'm right with you. Like, I've been playing so many older games and I never used to do that. Like, even up until about 2 years ago or something, I would never go back to older games really, or replay games that I'd already played to an extent. But now, you know, I'm going through entire franchises, and I do have services like PlayStation Now for that. But also, I wish there was more. I wish there was better ways to play those games, because streaming them over an emulator or whatever isn't ideal, especially if your internet starts conking out. And I just wish they were treated with a little bit more respect and could sit alongside, you know, their remakes or remasters and stuff. I do think we're thankfully getting away from them just kind of like selling these half-assed ports. Like, you know, we had Prototype or Marvel Ultimate Alliance and stuff that were wildly expensive.
25 quid for Marvel Ultimate Alliance. You bet your sweet bippy I paid full bill for that.
Where's X-Men Legends though? I don't care about that.
Nowhere. It's gone. It's gone, mate. It doesn't exist.
You've got to go by and play that on PlayStation 2. I've got a copy of that over there somewhere.
I mean, if you want to be Kane and Lynch is down there, by the way.
Nah, I'm all right, mate. I think I'm okay. I don't even, right, it's just as a final thing, as a final rambling thing, you know. I'm sure a lot of people would be like, look, if you want to play these games, just get out your old console, get out your old games, plug it into the telly. But let me tell you, in 2020, the real estate under my TV is incredibly limited, right? And the PlayStation 5 is taller than a skyscraper. And yes, this is a very much first world problem, whatever, but how can I have a PlayStation 1, a PlayStation 2, a PlayStation 3, and a PS5 hooked up to one single TV in a one-bedroom flat? Tell me that, guys.
You spend over a grand and a half on a big TV unit. Like, I'm with you there, because like, back there, look at that table. There's an Xbox on a box of Monopoly down there, because I just haven't even bothered to...
The Monopoly box?
Yeah, look, the Lord of the Rings Monopoly. Other Monopolies are available, but I don't know why you'd do that. And then the PlayStation 4 is over there somewhere, and the Switch is behind the TV. Like, I'm really scared. Like, do I just, like, I don't want to spend like £100 for four, which essentially will be four bits of wood to fit all these things in. But then, like, yeah, what do you do, sort of thing? And like, the N64 is in the cupboard, and the Wii is in a bag somewhere. Like, I don't know why.
Wii bag.
I think it's like kind of like a haunted item where I was unpacking it just there. I was like, wait, I left you in Sussex. What are you doing here?
But we're having a laugh about it here. We're having an old hearty giggle about it. But like, the fact of the matter is, I think it does tap into an interesting point that collecting these older games is becoming a sort of a luxury thing to do, because some of the older games, they're not cheap to get. If you try to get an original copy of Final Fantasy VII or Metal Gear Solid 1 in like a secondhand store, you're looking at quite a lot of money, not to mention buying the consoles, buying the things, buying the adapters to make them work on modern TVs.
The parts to repair them?
The parts to repair them, the controllers for them, you know? All of this stuff does add up ultimately, and the fact that gaming licenses aren't renewed, so you can't get, you know, Spider-Man games or old Marvel games, you know, directly from the source, you need to pay an inflated price for them after the fact. Like, it becomes a kind of luxury hobby in that sense, and then locks even more people out of it, you know what I mean? Like, we fortunately at least have some, you know, extra money to be able to spend on it, but like, a lot of people don't. And at what point do you just sort of reach your limit and decide, this is too much hassle, this is too much work, I'm just going to buy Resident Evil 2 Remake and just look online and see what other people who remember playing the original have to say about it, you know what I mean?
To impress Ben Roy when he's asking, yes, you didn't play the original Resident Evil. I haven't played either, lads, so I'm the biggest pariah right now, I think.
Go on, track it down. You track down a PS1, get Resident Evil 2.
Can I ask you both a question though? Because as we get into this, and I think of like, so like, how do we play our old PS2 games? How do you play Hit and Run? What do you think about it when you sort of have like, say, media on a VHS compared to a DVD? Like, how different do you think that sort of thing is there? Because obviously, like, it's very harder to, if you had all your stuff on VHS, it's harder to get things, not because obviously it's you can still kind of plug it into a TV or a few adapters these days, but it's also weird. Like, how do we keep all this media? Because, like, you think about it, a book's a book, and its book's going to be there as long as it doesn't get eaten or rot or mold or anything like that sort of thing. Whereas, like, all these sort of things eventually will erode away and like perish. So it's I always think about that, like, as you said, like, it's harder to find a console, stick it in, replace it. Like, I could just type on, like, Google Play Glover Now, which I won't because it's illegal. Like, I have a copy of it over there, so it's fine. But with, like, say, older films, how do you feel about when you had to buy all your films again on DVD and then all again on Blu-ray sort of thing? Is that sort of akin to this at all?
I mean, I think I might have a little bit of privilege here because when I was young and I was getting videos and DVDs, I didn't get them. My parents bought them. And then when I was a bright, bushy young lad who turned the age of 18, I started getting my own Blu-ray. So it's like, I agree to an extent, but less so because I think these other things, there's less of a divide between the different platforms. So like, it's a case of like, you're not going to need like, it's a disc at the end of the day. And there are so many different devices that can play that disc. So that's like the big kind of the lack of barrier there. Obviously there are films that are hard to track down and, you know, like that are completely out of print or whatever. And there are region locks and stuff like that. But I definitely don't think it's on the same level as gaming. I don't know what you think, Josh.
Yeah, I think I'm more or less the same. You know, I don't want to make a direct one-to-one comparison, but I think when you go from like VHS to DVD to Blu-ray or whatever, like fundamentally, like the experience more or less stays the same. It's the same movie, kind of like just with not even a few more bells and whistles. It's just, you know, cleaner, the colors are better, it's sharper, the image is better, the higher resolution and stuff. I think it's like, it's an option at that point. Like, you can like get the DVD version of a movie, but you can be happy with the VHS. You're not like forced or like, locked out of it.
I have the perfect analogy for this right now. It would be like if, say, you really liked Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 classic Psycho, right? You absolutely loved the crap out of Psycho, which you should do because it's a great film. But then the new piece of hardware comes out and then suddenly Universal Pictures or whoever, is it Paramount, Universal? I don't know who owns Psycho. Suddenly they're all there like, well, I'm sorry, mate. The only Psycho we acknowledge in this house is the Psycho remake. And then suddenly over time, the only version of Psycho you can get is a Psycho remake. That's kind of where, am I right there? Am I thinking that's like kind of a similar comparison?
I'm going to go one step further, Ewan, and use the Star Wars special editions as a comparison, right?
Oh,
because you can have the Star Wars special editions now, you can have that version on DVD, which I'm going to compare to the remade version of Resident Evil. You know what I mean? Like, okay, Resident Evil's probably better, but you've got Resident Evil as the
probably
Star Wars
better.
Special editions. And you can track down the VHS version of the original Star Wars and buy a VHS and buy a CRT TV or whatever, just like you can track down the original version of Resident Evil 2. You can buy a PlayStation 1, you can buy a TV that works for it, but it's not ideal, is it? It's not an ideal situation to be in. You want to be able to just go on Amazon or wherever and click a rent button and be able to have that version accessible without all of those hoops you have to jump through. I think ultimately that's what it is. You know, like, it's not the complete end of the world, I don't think, that Sony's removing these games from the desktop version of the storefront, but it's totally unnecessary and it adds more hoops and it's not progression, at least in my eyes.
I was going to say, that's dirty. They shouldn't have done that. Like, I can understand maybe deselecting it and having a tick box back for that sort of thing, but totally removing it just smells like, nah, this is going away. It's like, they've been trying to kill the Vita for how many years now? I think some people that are watching us now were probably born as the Vita was around, and certainly been trying to kill the Vita as long as they have existed on this earth. Like, they just won't go, nah, go away, it's dead. They just keep letting it struggle along, and now they're just like, they've just cut off the oxygen system and it's floating away into space. Like, you're gonna choke out eventually, you're gonna die.
Brilliant.
But until then, like, we have to just wait and watch it suffer.
Well, we've got to absolutely wrap this up now. I do encourage everyone to go check out the article on Vice. It is called The PS3 and Vita Are Being Buried Alive, and that was by Dia Lucina. So go check that out. But yeah, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. Thank you all for joining us. Obviously, I've been joined by my host, Ben Roy Turner, who you can follow on Twitter at
Ben Roy Turner.
You can follow Josh Brown on Twitter at
Josh Bruhn with two O's.
And you can follow me if you so desire on Twitter at Ewan Bruins Things. That is all for now, though. Thank you again for watching or listening wherever you are. And I hope you have a great day. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
You're all pretty good.
The sun's in my eye now. It's
I love it, mate. Oh, it's like, you look like you're ascending. It's good.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.